Are you looking to own a business that supports education in your community and provides you financial freedom? Well, join Huntington Learning Center. It's the top revenue-producing K-12 tutoring and test prep provider. Huntington delivers better student results than any other education franchise and 45% higher average franchise revenue than its nearest competitor. Huntington has spent nearly 50 years perfecting a proven system that helps students succeed and helps franchise owners thrive. So, why pick Huntington? Four reasons. Number one, a low startup investment. Number two, turnkey systems. Number three, dedicated support teams. And number four, multiple revenue streams to maximize your business growth. Don't have education experience? That is no problem. Huntington makes building a rewarding business simple for all. The demand for tutoring is higher than ever. And in today's growing $5 billion industry, Huntington helps you succeed. Call 1-800-653-8400 or visit huntingtonfranchise.com. That's 1-800-653-8400 or visit huntingtonfranchise.com. Don't wait. Own a business that changes students' lives and yours. Why is Mathnasium one of the world's fastest growing franchises? The answer is because the demand for after-school math help is skyrocketing, making it an exceptional financial opportunity with the power to change lives. That's also why Mathnasium is consistently recognized as the number one math-only education franchise. With over 1,100 centers worldwide, Mathnasium is the trusted brand name in math education, helping students build confidence and develop a love for math. Protected territories are available. Get your free franchise information kit at mathnasiumfranchise.com. That's mathnasiumfranchise.com.
From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
If you're a founder who makes a product, then this is probably your dream. Your dream is to be able to say, I am on retail shelves nationwide. And maybe you throw in a number there. Maybe you say, I am on 13,000 store shelves nationwide or something like that. And you know the problem with that? The problem is that, well, getting on those store shelves is the easy part. You know, people often think that the success, the accomplishment, is getting on the store shelves. But no. The success, the accomplishment is selling off of those store shelves. And that's a very, very different thing. Take it from a guy who has, well, accidentally bankrupted companies by putting them on store shelves.
Yeah, I had a brand that wanted to go to Target and they wanted to go big right away.
This is Matt. He used to be a buyer at Target, meaning he was the guy that decided which products made it onto shelves. And well, I'll tell you more about Matt in a minute, but let's just stick with this story he's telling.
We vetted them. We thought that they were going to be great. And you know, the reality was that they weren't. Their finances were not in line. And the minute that a big PO came and they had to go procure all the ingredients for it, they couldn't float. And unfortunately, 2 months later, the company was gone. They couldn't operate anymore. They couldn't get more debt. They couldn't raise more capital. And that was it.
And that was it. And here's the thing. Matt has seen that story play out many, many times. So anyway, here's who Matt is.
Hey, I'm Matt Adelman. I'm the VP of food and beverage at the Genesis Company. We are a Target brokerage that focuses in growing brands and scaling at Target.
And you used to be a Target buyer.
Yes, I spent 4 years at Target as the senior buyer within the deli department, managing all sorts of wonderful random products.
All of which is to say that Matt has seen the good and the bad and the ugly of retail. He knows better than almost anybody what it means to really succeed on retail shelves.
And to be clear, you can succeed. You can succeed. And getting onto retail shelves can be an amazing thing, but you got to do it right. And that is the thing that Matt wants to teach founders. In fact, it's also the thing that he needs to keep remembering for himself, because Matt isn't just a guy who helps people get on retail shelves. He also sees this from the perspective of a guy who has a small brand that wants to be on retail shelves.
So, I mean, in my not very much spare time, I'm the co-founder of Switchback Foods. About 2 years ago, I was introduced to Oli, my co-founder, and he needed someone that understood retail, sales, and marketing. And that was the connection there. So I lead all the sales, all the retail sales, and then the marketing aspects for Switchback. So I see both ends. I see big, big, big CPG brands and what they're doing and how they're winning at retail, but also startups and the challenges they have and the things that they're trying to do to just make it to the first million and figure out how do I just get that one next win.
And that's basically the question we're going to answer here on this episode of Problem Solvers. We are going to talk about how to get that first win and how to get many more, because Matt has seen how it works and he has identified three major mistakes that early stage founders make as they pursue retail. And if you understand what these mistakes make, then you can avoid disaster and you can also plan for success. Matt writes about this in Entrepreneur Magazine. Actually, I had him write a piece that's called Confessions of a Former Retail Buyer. You can find it in the March issue of Entrepreneur Magazine. But here I wanted to talk through this piece with Matt. I wanted him to unpack these three major mistakes so we can really dig in and you can hear directly from him about what he has seen go very, very wrong and also very, very right in retail. Coming up after the break.
Do you feel like your finance software just isn't cutting it? Do you want the latest and greatest in financial software to simplify spending, help you save time, and keep you from getting trapped in busy work? Well, then you got to check out Ramp. Ramp is the corporate card and spend management software designed to help you save time and put money back in your pocket. Ramp gives finance teams unprecedented control and insight into company spend. With Ramp, you're able to issue cards to every employee with limits and restrictions and automate expense reporting so you can stop wasting time at the end of every month. Ramp's accounting software automatically collects receipts and categorizes your expenses in real time, so you don't have to. You'll never have to chase down a receipt again, and your employees will no longer be spending hours submitting expense reports. And now get $250 when you join Ramp. Just go to ramp.com/solvers. ramp.com/solvers. That's ramp, ramp.com/solvers. Cards issued by Sutton Bank, member FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Stop sitting at your desk. Truly, I know you got a lot of work to do. I got a lot of work to do, but here's what I've learned. Walking away and getting outdoors is what gives you the energy to actually get the work done. And you should have an Amazfit T-Rex 3 on your arm. What is the Amazfit T-Rex 3? It's a tough, all-weather smartwatch built for outdoor enthusiasts and fitness fans. With a battery lasting over 3 weeks, it handles extreme temperatures and is waterproof up to 328 feet. Its bright 1.5-inch screen displays GPS maps, workout stats, and sleep recovery info, while its AI voice control lets you adjust settings or send messages hand-free. I'll admit, I am not as outdoorsy as I'd like to be, but I've been wearing the T-Rex 3 on hikes and while rucking, and I love it. It's so useful. Navigation, fitness tracking, weather updates, whatever you need, give it a try. Just go to us.amazfit.com/solvers. Amazfit, by the way, is spelled A-M-A-Z-F-I-T. So again, that is us.amazfit.com/solvers. All right, we're back. I am talking with Matt Adelman, the VP of Food and Beverage at The Genesis Company and a former Target buyer, about the do's and don'ts of getting onto retail shelves. And before we begin, just a quick note here about how I know Matt. So you may not know this, but I co-founded a private network for early stage consumer packaged goods founders called CPG Fast Track. I partnered up with some incredible friends of mine who have built just massive, very successful CPG brands. And we help early stage founders just accelerate their business, improve their sales, improve their marketing, improve their brand positioning. It is so rewarding. And Matt is a part of that. That's where we started talking about retail. And I said, man, you know so much about this. This has got to go in Entrepreneur Magazine, and we got to talk about this on the podcast. So anyway, if you're interested in CPG Fast Track, you can go to cpgfasttrack.com and learn more there. Okay, let's dig into the conversation with Matt. And to start, yeah, I asked him to just set up why it's so important to really understand retail and how wrong things can go if you do not.
I think there's a big misconception out in retail, especially with newer brands, where they think that if you swing for the fences right away, you can hit a grand slam and it's nothing but positive upside. And the reality is, when you swing for big POs, someone like Target, if you're not ready to handle it, if your cash flows are not in line, if you're not financially sound, there's so much that goes into being able to, you know, make the products, being able to go buy the packaging, the ingredients, the line time, the transportation, everything that just goes into making the product and getting it to the store. I think too many brands just focus there. They forget that once you're on shelf, you got to have marketing funds. You got to have trade funding. You got to deal with deductions and chargebacks and all the other fees and all the other things that come on top of it. And if you don't have that baked into your financials in the first place, it's going to be a major surprise. I mean, I had a vendor last year, $160,000 in chargebacks in 2 months.
Wow.
Right? Like if I'm a new brand, and granted, they're shipping full chain across the country at Target, but if I'm a new brand and I don't realize that I might be on the hook for even $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 in deductions, that's a big uh-oh. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So Matt, you had identified in this piece that we ran in Entrepreneur, three problems that founders run into that they may not realize is ahead of them when they pursue retail. And in this conversation, I'd love to walk through each of them, what the problem is, and then how to prepare for it, how to resolve it. And the first one is really coming out of what you just talked about a second ago. The first one is cash flow reality. Because as you write, retail costs money, a lot of money, like much more money than people think. You had just detailed some of that, but let's just step back a second and really appreciate that. You said you're going to get the largest PO you've ever seen. It costs a lot of money to purchase all of that and to get it onto the shelves. And you say that people don't really understand how much they need to budget for this entire process.
100%. I mean, do you want me to go into all the other miscellaneous things that pop up and people don't account for? Or?
Yeah, like what are people not accounting? Because you know, you write that. Look, even if you calculate out what the cost of the product and the packaging is, and then you budget for that, that's still likely not going to be enough money for the actual full experience. So, like, what are the other costs? What are people running into?
So let's take a fresh category as an example. So I do a lot of business in dairy and in deli. In those categories, you have something called shelf life. You know, the product only lasts so long. What ends up happening, let's say that you got 30-day shelf life. You're shipping to a DC. It then has to get unpacked and shipped out to individual stores. It sits in the back room. It gets stocked. You're going to lose, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 days. A lot of manufacturers are on the hook for what we call shrink or spoils. So at Target, they could shrink out 10% of all the products in dairy, as an example, right? So if I ship a PO in and I only sell 90% of it and I'm the vendor and I'm on the hook, I have to pay Target for the shrink and the spoils on that 10% that shrinks out. That adds up. I go into Target and I want to run promotions. I want to get a circular in the weekly ad. I want to get shelf space. I want to get an end cap. That all costs money. Right. So that's extra fees on top of what you're already not accounting for and just cost of production.
Right. Just to be clear there. So, you know, you're walking through, let's just be a consumer for a second. You're a consumer, you're walking through a Target or again, wherever, and you're seeing product on the shelf. If you're seeing an end cap we could define as just that kind of nice display at the kind of front of an aisle, right?
Yep.
That's that's not coming out of the goodness of somebody's heart over at Target. That is something that you're paying for. The brand is paying for.
You're paying for the space. You're paying for whatever promotions are happening. So most of the time you're on an end cap and it's going to be a sale. Whatever your sale difference is from your regular retail price, typically brands are paying that difference. You're paying at the end of the end cap set. If you don't sell through everything and you have extra inventory, you need to pay for the clearance or the markdowns there. There's a lot of extra cost that goes into it. Now, you sell a lot, right? End caps are the biggest, best spot because there's so much product that moves. But if you're new to this and you don't quite understand how to run promotions and marketing and get people excited about your brand, you know, there's a risk that it sits there. And there's a whole lot of bad things at the end of a big event like that if you don't get the product to turn and move.
Yeah.
That all adds in. That's all costs that most brands don't really think through before they go after it.
So what's your advice for how to think about the amount of money you need to do retail right?
Admittedly, I'm not a CFO. I'm not the good money guy here. So I would say number one, like, go find someone that truly understands retail CFO, retail accounting. And if you don't know, go find a network or group somewhere with people that have been through this. I think secondly, that's why brokers and reps exist. That is part of the benefit that we bring to a lot of clients is that we help walk through that stuff. So I have a customer right now, right? They're $800 million brand. And we're bidding on an end cap. And I have to go through and explain to them, like, guys, there's a lot of cost. Even for you guys, you can absorb all this. Do you understand X, Y, and Z? Oh, no, crap. We didn't realize that. I have to get it back to finance to bake it in. So I would just say, don't neglect really digging in on this because you don't know. Make sure you find someone that you can actually talk to and get advice from and help you walk through these numbers so you really understand what's going to happen.
Great. Let's move on to problem number two. So problem number two, you set up as more and more stores, as in what the founder wants is to be in more and more stores. And I understand that. And Matt, I will shoulder some of the responsibility for creating the impression that more and more stores is the goal. And the reason for that is because I've been in media long enough that I've, you know, written or edited many stories in which part of the way in which we're talking about the validity of a brand, right? This brand is killing it because they're in 4,000 stores, because they're, you know, like whatever, like we're using that number to show strength of a brand. But in reality, you say, like when you really understand retail, store count is not the thing that a founder should be chasing, right? Take me into that.
It's the kiss of death, Jason. It's you see some story of some overnight success and you forget the fact that they're in year 5 or 6 or 10 or 15. You think as a founder that in year 1 you need to go everywhere because you just want to win, right? The biggest mistake you can make is try to go across the entire country right out the gates thinking that you're so special and your product is so different and you're so innovative that everyone's just going to want you and it's going to be easy. Because the reality is getting into retail is hard enough. And I mentioned this, you know, a few minutes ago, you have to grow the brand. You have to be able to market and you have to be able to advertise and get people excited about it. So what we always coach people on is get into 100 doors, get into a local retailer, get into a space that you can legitimately handle and go drive as much success as you can there. Go drive, we call it units per store per week or sales velocity. Go drive as high of units per store per week as you possibly can. I don't care what retailer you do it with somebody. So you have a story so you can walk into the next retailer that you want to go to and show, look at what I've done here, right? And that could take you 2 years. It could take you 4 years. Time should be irrelevant here if you're doing it for the right reasons. Build those stories, focus on distribution, focus on local distribution, high velocities, get a great sales story, and then go expand.
And so I'm just going to make some assumptions here and then you tell me if I'm right. The reason why you want to do that is because number one, if you drive high velocity at a small number of stores, well, you said it, then you have a great story to tell other retailers. You have some excellent numbers. You have some real proof that you can build off of. But conversely, if you spread yourself out to 1,000 stores out of the gate, you can't support all that. Where's the money to pay for the marketing to drive velocity in 1,000 stores at the exact same time? what you'll probably end up with is very little velocity. You know, you're moving next to nothing every week. And if you do that, well, Matt, you tell me what happens.
You're gone. Like, unfortunately, like the buyers, the people who are making the decisions on what products to bring into their stores, their job is to grow sales. Like they have to. If they don't, they don't have a job. And as cool as your brand could be and as cool of a brand story as you have, and as much as they might want you to succeed, if you're not turning, if your velocity is not there, they're looking at their category assortment every 3 to 6 months to 12 months, depending on the retailer. They all, every single one, they've got a list. Here's my top items. Here's my bottom items. If you're in the bottom, you're gone. You're out. No questions asked. And it is really, I mean, one of the things we ask brands when they come to us at Genesis, if they want representation at Target is, have you been in Target before? And did it work or not? Because if it didn't work, and Target has history of a brand not working before, it's really hard to get back in.
Yeah, right. So let's, I mean, put your former Target buyer hat back on and just tell me from this perspective. So you work with a brand, you put them in some, you know, some sizable number of stores. They do not perform. You say, these guys got to go. You pull them from the shelves, and then they come back a year or two later and they say, okay, we fixed the problem. We're ready to come back. What do you say?
I mean, no. Like, I mean, really prove it to me. And this happens all the time. One of the things in retail, especially again with the bigger retail, and that's, sorry if I keep talking Target, but that's most of what I know.
That's where you're coming from.
These guys, I mean, they're rotating every 18 to 24 months typically, right? So if a new person comes in and they're not quite sure in the category and they don't quite have the confidence yet and they're, you know, they're not willing to kind of put their neck out for a brand, they're going to get something. Let's just pick a product that was there. Someone that comes back and pitches again, they're going to go back and look, did they sell or not? And if they see it didn't work, why do they want to stick their neck out in a brand new category when they have to prove that they know what they're doing? No, that brand didn't do it. There's so many new brands all the time coming, right? Everybody's pitching all the time. If it didn't work before, like, why is it magically going to be different?
So it's, you know, like, what I mean? Yeah, it's like, you know, you only get one shot. So you gotta take that shot when you're really ready. What about kind of a small version of this, but just curious what you think. What about tests? Like, you know, let's say that a brand talks to a Target or to a Whole Foods or to something, and they get offered to do a 100 store test in one region. Same rules apply here?
For the most part, same rules apply. Take the test. Do it. Like, tests are great. I would love testing in regions. It happens all the time. You better go in that region though and make sure that it's flying. You better be running meta ads or Google or whatever it is that you can to drive people to those stores, because you need that test to be successful. Like, same rule. Velocity trumps everything.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to problem number three that you see as founders enter retail, which is pitching the wrong way. So people come on this podcast and they tell the story of their brand and they talk about where it came from and where they came from and about the community that they've built off of their brand. And that's in part because they love talking about that, but it's also because a lot of them have been trained that that's what consumers want to hear. That's what you do in media. But as you wrote, that is not what buyers want to hear. Why?
Yeah, I think... the reality is a lot of people that come on the show and pitch the way you're talking and all these founder stories, they're wonderful for D2C. They're wonderful when you are driving to your website and you control the demographics that are coming, right? You pick who you want to target, go after it, right? The problem with it is that your brand and you have your people that you sell to, right? You have to convince those people to come to Target and buy it, but you have to convince this buyer in the first place that your product fits their store and their people. And too many brands don't truly understand the retailer's people, right? Target calls them guests. They don't really understand the Target guest. So they'll come in with their founder story.
The Target customer.
Yeah. Yep. They come in with their brand story. They come in with all the bells and whistles and their product and why it's so great, but they leave out the most important part. Why does the average Target shopper actually care? Are they going to buy it? Right? How is this going to help the buyer's category? If I'm a buyer, maybe you know, buyers are graded on, do you drive sales, do you drive margin? For the most part, right? Maybe I am totally fine on sales. My sales numbers are totally fine, but I really need a brand to drive margin, right? Like, do you understand what the buyer needs and where your product truly is going to fit into their strategy?
This is really valuable that you're saying this, because I think a lot of people think of the buyer as just the gatekeeper. And so the whole game here with any gatekeeper is just like somehow figure out how to get the gatekeeper to just open the gate. And the thing that you're saying, you know, bringing your experience as a former buyer, is the gatekeeper needs things too. Like, the gatekeeper is not an all-powerful being. The gatekeeper is an employee who's being judged on numbers. And so the gatekeeper is actually looking at you and saying, are you helpful to me? Like, very specifically me.
Yes.
And that makes it pretty personal, but it also shows you where the real opportunity is if you can have the right targeted, excuse the pun, conversation.
100%. I love the brands that I work with who get this, because before we go into any meeting with the vendor, it's always, tell me about the buyer. What's their name? What are they like? What are they like? You really need to know them. You need to make friends with these people. And the first question should be, like, this is the number one tip I can give people today. The first question to any buyer should be is, what is your strategy and how can I help? Before you tell them about your product, before you go and say why you're so great, find out what they need. Find out what they're looking for. Because if you don't fit, find out what the buyer needs. And then craft your story on how your brand is going to help the buyer get what they want and grow your sales. Don't just talk about you. Don't just talk about why your story is so great and your product's great. Because trust me, we talk to hundreds and hundreds of brands every single year. We being the buyers when I was at Target. Yeah. We hear it all. I need to drive sales. I need to drive margin, guys. Help me out.
Right. And so things that are really convincing for the buyer are, number one, you had just said a minute ago, you know, like, a lot of people don't spend time thinking about the customer that's walking into a Target. But if you understand who the customer is that's walking into the Target, then you understand their average household income and you understand the kinds of products that they're mostly responsive to. And then if you can walk in with data from your own sales experience showing that this specific Target customer is going to be interested in your brand because you have specific e-commerce sales data to back that up, because you have some geographic or demographic data that's like, whatever it is that shows, I understand, number one, what you need, buyer. I understand, number two, who your like customer is and what they want. And then here is real world data that I have that can convince you, that can prove that your customer wants my product because they've already displayed that in many other ways. And if you put me on the shelves, I do well for you. That's the pitch, right?
That's it. You did an interview with Kaizen Foods, Jason, I think it was last November.
Yeah.
They talked about taking Amazon seller data and success on Amazon and parlaying that into future retail conversations.
That's exactly right.
That's exactly what we're talking about. I call it make the buyer's job easy. Yeah. Give them everything that they need to go, well, this is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
The product's great. I love it. It's priced right. Oh, it already hits my shoppers, which, by the way, one more thing here, it drove me absolutely nuts when a brand would come in and they'd pitch me some high-end, affluent thing and go, oh, well, the target guest is, they have more money, they spend more money. No, that is a very small percentage of the target shopper. The average target shopper, a mom with two kids who makes $70,000 a year. So what do you have for her? You know, like, make sure you understand the demographics that you're talking to before you go into these meetings. Or again, ask the question.
Yeah, right. The thing that you're referencing there, by the way, just for those who don't remember it, is a couple months on this podcast, I talked to the founders of Kaizen, which is a pasta company, but I can't remember the details now, but they kind of pasta that's healthier and doesn't include some other ingredients or whatever. Anyway, so they've done extremely well on Amazon. And one of the things that they told me they didn't realize when they first got into e-commerce was that their e-commerce data was extremely compelling to retail buyers. Like, they did not know that. But, you know, that e-commerce data tells you, or if you're doing it right, tells you who's buying and where they live and You can start to make some real understanding of where those people also shop and therefore how to reach them. And all of that is very, very compelling.
Very. Yep.
Okay. So Matt, we've gone through the three problems that you say founders reach. And now I just want to land this by tapping into that other hat that you wear, which is as a founder or co-founder of a small consumer packaged goods brand, one that I am sure would like to be on retail shelves. And, you know, this is the industry you work in. You could call all your friends in retail buying. I'm sure you know everybody. And you know how to pitch them, and maybe you could get on tons and tons of shelves all at the same time. But you're not doing that, are you?
No, we're not.
Why
ready?
Not?
We're not ready. Like, there's too many things we don't know about the product and what is the absolute best sales story and where does it truly fit. Like, we're new. We're a year old. We're trying to figure out exactly who we are when we want to grow up. And if I go call in favors now and get meetings with buyers and show them something that, like I said, problem number three, pitching the right way. I don't have the story to help the buyers yet on exactly how to grow their categories the right way. So we're going to figure it out. We're focused on e-com. We're doing what we just talked about. We're trying to sell on Amazon and the e-com channels and find the right customers and demos and like really, truly understand our product and our reason for being. When we have that, yes, absolutely. We'll go to retail. But until then, we're going to just keep learning, keep getting better each day with it.
And are you on any retail right now?
We will in April. We are launching with Sprouts. So that's pretty exciting.
That is great. And so tell me, let's just take everything that we have talked about here. And I just want to hear you kind of now apply it to your own strategy. So you're launching at Sprouts, but I assume you're not launching, I don't know how many Sprouts locations there are, but you're not launching in every single one of them across. Like you're going to take the slow, right?
So we are taking the test and learn route that you referenced. We technically are going into all 400 stores, but we're going in through their innovation program. So it's a 90 day set, 400 stores, limited one PO. So for us as a small company, it's just one PO. So we're not going to get, crushed with another order. 90 days. So we have 90 days to go prove what we can do. And just like I talked about, we are picking the top 150 stores to go win and drive velocity. Because if we can show Sprouts that this stuff sells and that their customer cares and they like it, awesome. We can come back with a really strong story on why we should be there every, year round all the time. So it's a little different, but it's a mixture of all the things we talked about. Taking it, we're being methodical about it, we're being strategic about it, and we're really trying to support and have the absolute best success we can at each store we're in.
And just thinking back to the beginning of the conversation, you must have also had a lot of conversations about exactly what you could afford there, right? And you got to make sure that financially you're set up to do that rollout.
Yes, exactly. We went and made sure that our finances are in line to handle all the things that we just talked about. We're super lucky. We do have a CFO who comes from retail. He gets it. So thankfully, he can explain all the things that I don't know on this side. We're living exactly what you and I just talked about the last 20 minutes ourselves. Like, we're no different. We have to prove that we have a place in retails and in retailer strategy, and the only way to do that is with data and testing and figuring it out. So
it's awesome.
Not easy, but it's fun.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for taking us into the retail do's and don'ts here and your own personal experience with it. And the very least, as a starting point, may this conversation erase founders' anxiety about store counts and like that they have to do this fast and they have to really roll it out. Like, this is supposed to be a really long game, right? And like, success is not measured in how fast you get to the most number of places.
I think so. I think that's the right way to do it. I'm not in venture capital, so I don't know what those guys do, but I think, again, switch back with what we're trying to do. We want to be here in 20 years. Like, we have no plans to be just this overnight success that flies to the moon and sells. Like, we're doing it because we love it and we really believe in the product and we're having a lot of fun. So for us, it's a long game.
Right, right. I guess that's true. So if you're listening to this and you just raised $100 million for a retail rollout, he'll have a different kind of conversation with you.
Yeah, yeah. We do that stuff too. But for the startups, it's a very different world.
Yeah, right. Okay. Matt, thank you so much.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Jason. It was great coming on, and I love the show here, so thanks for having me.
And that's our episode. I would love to hear what you think, and maybe even about a problem that you solved. You can find me at my website, jasonfeifer.com, JasonFeifer.com. Also, I have some more useful stuff for you. I write a newsletter about how to future-proof yourself and become more adaptable and optimistic. I would love for you to sign up. It is at jasonfeifer.bulletin.com. Also, check out my other podcast. It's called Build for Tomorrow. In each episode, I take on some belief that we have that holds us back from progress and show you why it is not as bad as you think. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media and comes out every Monday morning, so make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss an episode. Thanks to Deepa Shah for production. My name is Jason Feifer. See you next week.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. On Face Off, the U.S. versus China, we'll explore what's critical to this important global relationship. Trump and Xi Jinping, AI, TikTok, and even Hollywood. New episodes of Face Off are available now, wherever you get your podcasts.